Hey everyone, Jeff Woods here. Two things before we dive into the episode. First, we are hiring an amazing community manager, and we would love for this person to come from this community right here. If you are someone or know someone who loves to create amazing content, who loves to engage with a community and wants to manage all of the content creation for the business, then please go to theonething.com/jobs. And that's with the number one in the URL, theonething.com/jobs. And also, we are on a mission to getting to know you better. And we put together a quick quiz that literally takes less than a minute to complete. If you have not yet done this, please go to theonething.com/podcast quiz. It'll help us get to know you better so that we can cater the content accordingly. With that, let's get into the episode. This is the One Thing podcast, where we teach you the surprisingly simple truth behind extraordinary results. My name's Jeff Woods. I'm the vice president here at the One Thing team. In the last episode, you got to hear a mother-son story about how Holly McRae started living the One Thing and bringing it in her household, and how her son, Cade, started living this as young as 8 years old. If you missed that, go back and check that episode out. In this episode, you're going to get to hear a story about how two young guys both had a dream of building something big, ended up connecting out in China and creating a company that is taking on the big boys, companies like Philips and GE, and they have absolutely disrupted the lighting industry. And it started because they set clear goals, they took massive action, and they focused on forming the right relationships so they could recruit the right people into their world. With that, let's get into the story of how Green Creative Lighting was born with Cole Zucker and Guillaume Vidal.
Eating healthy is an investment. It's an investment in yourself, but it also often requires an investment of your time. But good news is, Factor has delicious, ready-to-eat meals that are ever fresh and never frozen. They're chef-created, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. With Factor, you can choose from a weekly menu of up to 35 options, including popular things like Calorie Smart or Keto Direction or Protein Plus or Vegan and Veggie. Also discover 60 more add-ons every week, like Breakfast on the Go, lunch snacks, beverages to help you stay fueled, feel good all day. And we know our listeners here at The One Thing are focused on health and health goals. That's why we choose to partner with Factor. And if you visit factormeals.com/150 and use code 150, you can get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. Again, that's factormeals.com/ONE50 and use code ONE50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month.
I'm excited to have this conversation today, Cole. When your story first got shared with me, I was really amazed at just amazing perseverance to grow a really great business. Cole, where did your entrepreneurial journey start?
So my entrepreneurial journey started the day that I was literally fired from my first job working in finance back in 2007, which was pretty much right after I graduated from school.
Good timing, by the way.
Yeah, people say that when I tell them the story that, you know, it was fine because, you know, you got laid off as a result of the financial crisis. But I tell them actually it was performance related and about a year before that happened. So.
Shot to the ego. So what happened?
Yeah, exactly. So I had studied Mandarin in college. I had been to Beijing while studying abroad in a program there. And I had always wanted to work in China. But when I graduated from college, I felt like working as an English teacher there would have been somewhat of a step back in my career. So since I was a finance major, I decided to move on the trajectory, which was, you know, go to New York and find a job in banking there, which is what I did. But, you know, after the incident of the performance related firing, I realized that, you know, at my age, it was best that I should pursue my dreams and the things that I wanted to do. And of course, that led me to moving to China, Shanghai specifically. And I did that without a job, thinking that I would be able to find something, that it would all work out, that it was my passion, had this drive that had really been boiling inside of me for quite some time. And through a couple of random connections and meetings with certain people that were from some weird part of my life, and this is another story again at some other point, I was able to land a job working for a Chinese factory that manufactured building materials. And one of the things that the company did was also lighting.
That's interesting. And at what point did you meet Guillaume?
So I was working for this factory and enjoying my time there. It was a wonderful experience because I was able to speak Mandarin every day and really accelerating my career because of all the responsibilities I was given. But I had this inkling inside of me to start my own business. And a part of that was because I would see my boss driving very fancy cars and clearly having a lot of money. And not to say that I wanted to be like him, but I didn't feel like there was that much that was separating myself from him in terms of his intelligence, his drive, and you know, all the things that had led him to be successful as well. So I was looking for the one thing that would enable me to move back to the US and start a business. And I had a friend, his name was Guillaume Vidal. We were both in the lighting industry and we felt like together we would be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah. Guillaume, what was it? What was going on in your life at that time when you were hanging out with Cole in Asia?
Yeah, I started a second job in the lighting industry, and with my previous experience, I stayed in the company for 4 years. And the day I left, I realized that I should have left a lot earlier. I wasn't really learning anything new and wasn't really excited about the job for the past 2 years. And landing a new job in a new company, starting getting new exciting challenges. So that was when I told myself, you know, life and work has to be about exciting challenges and developing my skills and learning every day. And I have to stop the day this is not happening anymore. And at the time we met with Cole, I was reaching that point where I couldn't really develop my career anymore in that company. And it was time to really start something of my own.
Both Cole and Guillaume knew that they wanted to start a business. And even though they were in the same industry and they were friends, life got in the way and they lost touch. And one day, Cole found himself, he sits down on the couch, he hits the remote, and up on TV pops Guillaume.
I had this incident where I accidentally sat on the remote and Guillaume appeared on the TV. And I said, oh, Guillaume Vidal, I haven't seen this guy in a little while. I wonder what he's up to. And then we reconnected, and immediately that night that we reconnected, started discussing how to start a business together.
I'm imagining what you're thinking in that moment. If you want to start this business, you probably have big ambitions. You want to take massive action. You're looking at all the things that you could do. How did you get clear on what to focus on starting out?
We really didn't know what we wanted to do at first. The only thing we knew is that we wanted to work for ourselves. We wanted to build our own business. We didn't want to report to anybody. And that was all that mattered. That was the energy that we both felt when we first started. It wasn't until later that we had to refine the strategy, understand what would be best for our market, specifically under our extraordinarily limited budget, because we had tried to raise some money with the pitch deck. And unfortunately, it was a massive failure because everybody said the same thing. GE and Philips are going to eat your lunch. And so I'm not interested in it. So we were forced to go it on our own.
So I'm super curious about this because a lot of people think you're going to start a business out. You're going to go against the GEs, the Philips of the world. You're going to have to raise money. You have to have a war chest. And that wasn't your reality. You had no budget, shoestring budget, if that. And yet you've now scaled that to what? $65 million a year in top line?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's the one thing you did that made the biggest impact scaling that type of a business over such a short period of time?
Yeah, the one thing was our velocity. We were really a small organization, of course, the two of us to begin with, and with a very clear goal, set up a good product line of product, bring it directly to the market, initially try to undercut some of the older distribution channels and go directly to the distributors. And against us were huge companies where they had big processes and teams in place and approvals they needed to get from different departments. On our side, it was very streamlined process and we were able to execute a lot quicker than those companies.
So that's what you mean by velocity. It was just straight up speed.
Yeah, it was the speedboat against the oil tank.
Nice visual. My question for those of you who are listening to this right now, where in your business are you trying to compete and you're dragging your feet? Where in your business are you trying to compete and you're dragging your feet versus just taking action fast? I love what you said, Cole, about just streamline simple process, because behind the scenes, as we've been building this business, one of the things my partners have been challenging me on is how do we keep everything simple? It's so natural to complicate things. And I'm hearing you talk about creating products and distribution channels, and I'm immediately getting confused, yet simple, right?
Yeah.
There is something that I believe is very important when starting a business and not to be underestimated. And that is when you're an industry outsider or somebody trying to bring a fresh new idea to an industry that hasn't been done before, you have a natural advantage because the people, the companies that are in the channel and doing the same thing that they've been doing for a long time, it's very difficult for them to be innovative, to break these habits that they're so used to. And when you're able to come in with a fresh new look and perspective and have that speed, meaning something doesn't work, you can back out of it just as fast as if it does work and you can grow it, then you really are primed to be successful in whatever you're about to do.
How did that show up for you guys?
It showed up in a lot of different ways, but namely in the beginning, the fact that we hadn't ever done this before, a lot of it was discussions that we would have at night and in the morning together, where we would plot whether something would work or not. We would try it. If it didn't work, we would just stop and try something else. So in the beginning, especially when it came to calling on the customers, because we didn't really know who would be the established customers that would eventually buy our product, it really was a shotgun effect of trying to call on everybody, to talk to everybody and see what worked and what didn't.
Mm. What have been the biggest challenges that you guys have faced as you've grown your business?
Yeah, I can think of a big one, which was money related. It was about year two. We had managed to accumulate about $1 million of payables. And to put it in perspective, Cole and myself put all our savings in, which totaled less than $250,000. So when we started realizing that we had a bill for $1 million, we went into freakout mode. And at that point, the one thing we needed to do is find money.
What'd you do there? I'm putting myself in your shoes and what'd you do?
The one thing we didn't do was argue about whose fault it was or what got us into this situation. Both our eyes were off the finance, off the books. We're just doing everything else and really focus on executing our respective parts in the business. So we started by calling all the vendors one by one, visiting them and laying out the situation, which was we were not going to be able to pay them on time. We will pay them, but we need to schedule things over the next couple of months. And by the way, we still need you to manufacture and ship the goods that you have on the production line, although we cannot pay the one you already shipped, because we need to keep the business alive. That was the first action. Then we deck together and starting reaching out to all friends, family, friends of friends, anybody we could find on the internet and sending the deck, hoping to get some money. And we got very lucky, a connection of a friend of ours, actually someone in the industry that we've been in contact with in the past, became our angel investor at that point, literally an angel because he saved us.
So let me get this straight. Here you are. You have vendors that were creating your product that you hadn't paid yet. And you went to them in person and told them, we're not going to be able to pay you for this because of X, Y, and Z. We will pay you. It's going to be more delayed. And by the way, we need you to continue manufacturing and shipping because we need that to generate the revenue to pay you for what you already created.
That's exactly right.
Here's what's interesting about this, because I'm going down the relationships hole here. What did you do to create such a level of a relationship that they continued to produce for you?
I believe it's a couple of things. The first one is lighting is a pretty old industry, and at the time, we were one of the few companies they were dealing with. We were really starting to penetrate. The year after that, there was a ton of other companies, but our timing was quite nice where there was not a ton of startup at the time trying to enter that industry. And they felt that we had very good industry knowledge. Both Cole and myself also spoke Chinese, and at the time, we were dealing with Chinese manufacturer. I was actually based there. So it was pretty hands-on and pretty unique as far as, you know, starting the relationship with those two foreigners speaking Chinese, trying to break into an industry where they haven't seen someone new in the last 20 years and telling them we're going to take over the world.
That's interesting. Once that was behind you, you started to gain momentum and you're realizing that, okay, you're going somewhere. The company is growing. Talk to me about the vision that you set, because I find a lot of people focus on the day-to-day. They're working in the business and they're not taking enough time to cast the long-term vision and do the 20% activities that really build sustainable long-term viability. What did that look like for you?
For us, we were so busy counting every penny that was leaving the business that we forgot to recognize that the business was growing and it would need to be scaled up in order for it to be viable in the future. It's very true that when you start a company, the foundation can be forgotten about because you're so stuck in the day-to-day. And when you're given different options or decisions in terms of should I spend the money now or wait later until I get to a certain level of revenue? Most of the time you take the way out, which is going to be the cheapest, but ultimately for the long term, that's absolutely not the best.
And what were some of those, I'm thinking about all the shiny objects that you could have taken advantage of that would have been great for you in the short term, but wouldn't have been the best for the long term. Take us to one of those moments.
So in year two, we did about 2 million in sales, which was way ahead of what we thought we would have done. And actually from year two to three, we went from 2 million to 8 million. And in order to do those types of numbers, you have to have the right people to help to grow it, to focus on different areas such as supply chain operations and product development and quality control, for example. And we really were so focused on the pennies leaving the business that we cared more about filling the position than we did about filling the positions with quality managers who could show us this is the way we need to scale in order to get to the next level or the next level. And for the first couple of hires that were more on a higher level than the previous employees, we really screwed up because we went with the cheapest people as opposed to the best.
This is when the gift of being in Gary's world is from day one, you were told if they're going to report to you directly as the CEO, they've got to be an empire builder. They've got to have the capacity to do the job today, but to ultimately have the altitude where they could rise up in the ranks and replace you one day as the CEO. I'm hearing you say that you were so tight on money that you didn't go for the empire builder. You went for the cheap route.
This is a fact. And we paid for it with a couple of very costly mistakes.
Now you get the right people in place. What's that done for you?
So once you find the right people, first of all, you realize that they're much better at you at doing their specific job than what you were doing in the past. One very good example is when we hired our operations manager, the second one, literally after a week in the job, we had a meeting with him and we told him to be completely honest with us and tell us, you know, what he thought. And he told us, everything you guys are doing is completely wrong. We have to start from scratch, scrap all the kind of processes that you have and review everything. That was really a key moment in the company because at the time we had very poor customer service. I mean, the business has grown so quick. We couldn't fulfill the orders on time. We're out of stock. The warehouses were not shipping quick enough. We're not processing orders quick enough. The customers couldn't get tracking. It was kind of a nightmare situation. And having someone that knew what they were doing allowed us to give him full trust and then focus on other area, sales for Cole and product development for me, where we were much stronger than operations, obviously.
You fast forward to today and you guys, how long has the business been in existence?
8 years.
You're 8 years into the business and, you know, it's done extraordinarily well. How have you managed your time differently? What do you do differently now when it comes to your time versus when you were starting out?
Quite a lot, actually. When we were first starting out, we had to do everything. There was nobody to depend on. And truth be told, we didn't know what we were doing. So a lot of it was just making the mistake over and over again. As we've grown the company and put together wonderful management and the team that's below them, we've been able to step back and focus more on the vision as opposed to the day-to-day. So before, when it came to a problem with a customer, it would always end up on my plate, and then Guillaume and I would probably have to discuss it. But of course, that was never the best use of our time. Now, today, we're fairly off the day-to-day, and fortunately so, because it allows us to say, this is the destination we'd like to go to, and will the company to get to that area, that place.
Guillaume, how about for you?
Yeah, it's the same thing. We went from being completely hands-on, doing literally everything in the business, to having very talented people work with us and rely on them for the day-to-day and for their input as far as the planning. But we're much more in the planning mode, and as opposed to being in reactive mode. And that's the biggest difference. And that's what in the long term is going to build a sustainable and successful business.
So I've heard Gary say this so many times. Anytime in your life you're hitting up against the ceiling of achievement, you're missing a person. For many people starting out, you are doing everything, and there is a ceiling to how big you can grow your business because you're missing a person in the form of leverage. My question is, when you guys were both all suited up as professional firefighters and you were doing absolutely everything, how did you make finding people a priority?
Yeah, it was pretty evident that we needed help when we were busy, in my case, for example, on a production line in a factory to solve some issues, or dealing with customers related inquiries on call set, that was not the best use of our time. And so we set a target with a couple of key hires, like operations management, R&D managers, quality managers, those kind of roles. And that's what we did. The most part of the day was just spending trying to achieve those goals, to hire those people to take us off from the day to day. And finding people, I mean, a company, a business is about people. And that's always been the biggest challenge. You need money, of course, but without people, you don't go very far. And it took time for certain positions. It took years before we could find the real deal. But as soon as you bring in someone that's talented, the effect is pretty immediate in the business.
And it's not that we didn't want to hire people early on that could help us to drive and to scale the business. A lot of times for an entrepreneur, it's a challenge. You want to do everything. You want to be able to be the guy, the person that is able to build the empire and in some ways do it by yourself, or in my case, to do it with my business partner. And so when it comes to wanting to improve the operations or wanting to make the sales team more efficient and effective, it's hard to say, well, I'm going to give this up to somebody to do it themselves, because I'm doing this every single day. I'm in charge. And if I were to give it up to somebody, I might lose the eyes off of this critical piece of the business. But the truth is, the more time you can focus on doing what you're best at and be able to get rid of those areas that are not the best use of your time and generating that value, the more your business will be at risk for scaling, or for its inability to scale.
I'm putting myself in the listener's shoes and going, all right, how do I apply this to me? What's the one thing you would suggest to them walking away from this episode?
The one thing that everybody needs to focus on when they start a business is the goals. And that's specific to whatever you want to achieve. But if you don't have a target that you're driving towards, if you don't have that mountain peak that you're trying to climb to, you're really going to be lost. And you got to continue to set that target, especially when you hit that target, because you need to continue to develop and to grow, and making sure that you're focusing on that next goal. And that next goal, that's critical. And one last thing about that is, when you get to your goal, you can celebrate, drink a glass of champagne, but continue going to that next one, because there's no time to celebrate if you really want to grow and scale a business into something significant.
Yeah. And we just see this all the time, because when people lack clarity on the goals, which is most people, by the way, real true clarity on what their goals really are, it's very easy to get attracted to the low-hanging fruit, those shiny objects that in the short term seem really awesome, yet you're failing so slowly you think you're succeeding. You're not actually going in the direction that serves your life's purpose. You're failing so slowly and it feels like you're succeeding. Cole and Guillaume, where can people learn more about you and Green Creative?
So on greencreative.com, you can find more information about the company, and Cole Zucker, Green Creative, and Guillaume Vida, Green Creative on LinkedIn. You can follow us.
Awesome. And we'll link to their bios below in the description, the show notes as well. Well, thanks for coming on, guys. Really appreciate it and look forward to seeing what you guys do over the next few years.
Thanks a lot, Jeff, for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. It was great.
Well, there you have it. My conversation with Cole Zucker and Guillaume Vidal. Folks, the things that really stand out for me are three things. First and foremost, the importance of having a goal. You heard me mention most people don't really have clarity on what their goals are. And what I mean by that is that sometimes we set goals based on what we think our goal should be. How much money should I make? What kind of promotion? What should my health look like? Yet what we've discovered when we facilitated our goal setting retreat last year is that most people have never really been in the space where they can really ask the question, what are my someday goals? What does an amazing life look like someday from now? And based on that, where do I need to be 5 years from now to be on track for the someday? And based on that, where do I need to be this year to be on track for the five, and so on and so forth? It's why if you go to theonething.com, that's what the one thing with the number one in the URL, click on free stuff. There is a guide called the Kick-Ass Guide to Goal Setting. Strongly recommend you download that and go through that. Most people simply don't have clarity on what they want to accomplish this year and have the certainty that it's going to line them up with where they want to go. I hear that Cole and Guillaume had clarity on their goals. And that way, when the shiny objects popped up, they weren't distracted by them. They were able to stay focused, and the results are there. 8 years in, their business has scaled from nothing to 65 million. And these are young guys. The second thing is the importance of velocity. Taking massive, fast action. Sometimes it can be so easy to be bogged down in trying to get things perfect versus just getting things done. And I heard that these guys, the reason they were able to scale and that they didn't get crushed by the big boys is because they were just faster. Where in your business are you allowing complexity, unnecessary process, restrictions to slow you down? And you've got guys like Cole and Guillaume who are taking your market share. What's the one thing you can do differently so that you can get things done faster? And then the final thing is the importance of building the team. Jay and I have conversations about this all the time. It's really easy to get caught up in the day-to-day. How can you protect time so that you have the habit of consistently being in relationship with talent? Any of you business owners who have been doing this a while know the downside of this. You spend too much time in the business and all of a sudden you have an open spot and you've realized you've got no bench. And you've also learned that if you've maintained a bench because you developed the habit of being in relationship with talent, when all of a sudden a person leaves your world and you realize you've got a massive hole to fill, boom, you've got your bench and you fill that person in and the business continues on. Our question for you is, out of everything that you heard in this episode, what's the one thing you can do such that by doing it makes everything else easier or unnecessary? What's that one little action you can take that will guarantee that the time you invested in this episode will be an amazing return on the investment of your time? Thank you so much for listening. If you have not yet subscribed, please go ahead and click the subscribe button. And thank you to those of you who have left us a rating and review recently. Sean, we appreciate that you left a review saying, if I could, I would give it 3 thumbs up. You're hilarious, man. So folks, we read every single one of these. If this episode has made an impact on you, please leave a review. It helps us reach more people, which allows us to make a bigger impact. And that's the reason we're doing what we're doing. So thank you so much. And we look forward to being with you in the next episode.